Guaranteed not to like a racist meme on Instagram. Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
I was telling them for years that this dude was like this. Rest in piss, Noah Gregson.
I will only have two words to add to this dialogue. Pack watch. Welcome to episode 463 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. And over the next hour, we're going to talk about some more fun and actually entertaining things about American motorsport and not some dickhead from NASCAR. Well, formerly NASCAR.
I walk out here with every night with hustle, loyalty, respect on my sleeve. That is the creed that I've adopted from the men and women who defend this social media platform. We have caught and compromised to an indefinite end the Legacy Motorsport Club employment of Noah Gregson. Legacy Motorsport Club? Fuck.
Legacy Motor Club. The artist formerly known as Petty.
Literally and figuratively. Yeah, that's fun. Oh, by the way, I'm Dre Harrison. Welcome to Motorsport 101, by the way. We're going to talk about IndyCars, Music City Grand Prix in Nashville. Oh boy! Now we were cycling through this calendar for IndyCar, and we looked at Nashville, and I was like, "Oh no, here we go again. Nashville's going to be a shit show again, isn't it?" And actually, it turned out to be a pretty good race. Generally speaking, the drivers behaved themselves, and it turned into a good strategic race.
Loved it.
Yeah, good stuff. RJ O'Connell, like, your crops are flourishing over there because your home race finally came good.
It's crazy. I have not lived in the southeastern United States for nearly 3 years now, right? If I need to go to Nashville, that's a flight away now. And I haven't made that flight ever since I moved up here to somewhere in New England. But generally speaking, good race. And hey, King is back. Long live the king. It had been a hot minute, but Kyle Kirkwood is back on the top step of the podium.
We told you this boy was good. We've told you numerous times we thought this boy was good. We dedicated an entire podcast to talking about how we thought this boy was good. And it turns out that boy is good. Isn't that right, Cam Buckley?
Damn right. You're damn right he's good. King Kyle never left. He just was, you know, chained to a Foyt drive for a year.
It's crazy. 1 year ago, his race ended with him just broadsiding David Malukas into a tire barrier.
I remember that.
My, how fortunes change. But not for David Malukas, who had a combination rear wing and gearbox failure all in one go.
Yeah, had a fire on the car, which causes rear wing to fail, which is about as... that's about the most David Malukas thing that possibly could have happened. His year has not been a good one, has it?
As Jason says in that chat, cartoon anvil treatment right there. It's like just when you thought things are going well for him, the anvil falls on his head. He's 17th in the championship right now. David Malukas deserves better than that. And
was the cartoon anvil signed on loan from Alexander Rossi?
Might have done.
I don't know, given how Rossi's weekend went, I think it actually was one of those missiles that splits off into multiple cartoon anvils.
Oh, it's the cluster bomb from Worms Armageddon. If not, the blast range of the concrete donkey was large enough where both of them got collected in the same
incident.
Interestingly
enough, if you told me that the concrete donkey was a honky-tonk bar in Nashville, I would believe you.
without a question. You're like, okay, what street's it on?
Exactly.
The wing's like, good.
It's just around the corner. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. Kyle Kirkwood taking his second win of the year ahead of Scott McLaughlin, who did everything right and finished in second again in Nashville from pole position. He must be thinking, God, what have I got to do to keep doing this? And wait, hang on a minute. Alex Palou was third again. How does this keep happening? Why? How?
This man was born with a natural 20 in his hand. He's just invulnerable to all threats, physical or magical.
He he is the walking, like, he is the greatest D&D player of all time. Clearly, he only rolls 20s because he finished third when he really shouldn't have done. We'll get into a bit more detail as to why that was, because this was a game of strategy all race long. We'll talk a little bit about a certain surprise debut, because Linus Lundqvist was in there this weekend in the number 60 car this weekend and did pretty well until he crashed. But hey, the vibes are good coming out of England, because he'll be taking over again this weekend for the Indy Road Course race, the Gallagher Grand Prix, the second Indy Road Course race of the year. But it might be coming at Simon Pagenaud's expense. We'll talk a little bit more in detail about that, because I've been waiting for the right podcast to talk about this in more detail, and this feels like the right one. We'll talk about that and a little bit more about Nashville. Well, we kind of hinted at this towards the end of last week's show as a breaking news story, but now we have it official that Nashville will be staying on the calendar as the season finale going forward, and it's a new layout featuring Broadway. It looks like a pork chop. So we'll talk.
Looks like a musical note. Tell the good people where to find this podcast.
We are on motorsport101.com for all of our podcasts and all of our extra written content written by yours truly. If you want a massive deep dive into my weekend at Silverstone and, of course, the MotoGP race itself, you can read that or my thoughts on IndyCar's Music City Grand Prix in extra detail over on there as well. Early access is just $1 for the month of August over the summer break. No better time to be a Patreon backer than right now. Motorsport101.com has a Patreon page on there, patreon.com/motorsport101, if you want to back us financially on there to support us as well. And on social media, we are at Motorsport101 Pod on Instagram as well as on X. Fuck off, Elon. X at motorsport_101. Our personal handles are at Dre_WTF1, at RJ O'Connell, and at CBuckley917. Without further ado, let's get into the Music City Grand Prix at Nashville.
Kyle Kirkwood took advantage of an overcut in the middle of the Music City Grand Prix to take the lead over a very fast and pole-sitting Scott McLaughlin, and never really looked back, surviving a late charge from the Kiwi to win his second race of the season ahead of Scotty Mack. And, well, who else? How the hell does Alex Palou keep doing this? He finished third on a strategy that had him dead to rights in the middle of this race. So, gang, are we surprised we beat the Crashville allegations?
We beat the Crashville allegations. Yes, we did have a track blocker that led to a red flag with a few laps to go. But generally speaking, you get through at least 75 or 80% of this race without a caution. We have beaten the Crashville allegations. We've done it. We've done it.
And let's be real, they only threw that red flag because IndyCar has developed a severe allergic reaction to finishing races under yellow.
I can't help but keep scratching it.
Okay, Clint Boyer.
So Scott McLaughlin is pretty much got this first stint in control, and he's got in control on the alternate tires, which are pretty much junk. It's a hot day. This is a primary tire race. But fair enough, he stretches more life out of these tires than he should have. Hits after 25 laps. Then it settles into Romain Grosjean versus Kyle Kirkwood in the battle for the lead. Grosjean comes in one lap, Kirkwood comes in the next, and McLaughlin comes out behind Kirkwood and ahead of Grosjean, and McLaughlin would never regain the lead or net lead of the race thereafter. Kyle Kirkwood, I would hesitate. I would not want to call him like a street circuit specialist because, like, I've seen it in Nittany Nets. He's good at all types of circuits, but he's been very good on street circuits this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit early days. I mean, we are still talking about a guy that's only had 30 IndyCar starts, and 18 of them were with AJ Foyt, which might as well not exist in the grand scheme of things. But it's the second street track that he's won, and both races were very similar in that pace was the order of the day. How good were you at open air, and how good were you able to make your strategy work? And McLaughlin was on the alternate tire. He was fast. He went longer than anybody else on said tire. It was a primary tire race. And shout out to Brian Herter. Like, we forget Brian Herter was being race engineer for his own son until the round before Long Beach this year. The first race he and Kirkwood were together, they won.
That's crazy.
At Long Beach, with Grosjean directly behind him, funnily enough. And that was like Andretti's best day in IndyCar for years, where they were first, second, and fourth that weekend.
And it should have been better since then, because, of course, Kyle was knocked out of the Indy 500 through no real fault of his own. He was going to be in that fight for the lead coming down the stretch when he had a tire peeled off of his car and launched into someone's Chevy Cruze by Felix Rosenquist's own accident. This guy's good. This guy shouldn't have been shackled to a Foyt drive for a year. He was always good enough to plug into this car from the start. And, I mean, resisting Scotty Mack for pretty much three quarters of a race.
Yeah.
Well, we know what Scotty Mack is capable of through traffic. He's a phenomenal passer. You know, Jandl first, fuck yeah, etc.
And on multiple late race restarts. I mean, yes, we did have a couple of incidents late in the race. One we'll talk about. There was a track blocker at the end, which created another like relapse for it to the finish.
But RJ, he nailed both restarts. Yeah, he left Scotty for dead on both restarts. Leave him an opening.
That's not McLaughlin. That's a pretty damn good driver. And when he was driving 10 tops, he was good around street courses. Let's not forget.
How could we?
Yeah, he's always been this good. He's all like, to borrow a line from Peter Drew and Lionel Messi won the World Cup, he's always been the point of difference. And he has proven he can do this at every level of motorsport, and he continues to do so. Like, if anything, what this second win does for me is just highlight how annoying Andretti's season has been across the board. Like, Kirkwood,
talk about this with Aprilia last episode.
Right.
Pretty much. Like, they're the definition of close but no cigar. And
right.
Kirkwood and Herta very much kind of blown as hot or as cold as Andretti has blown.
Colton Herta, he was running up front for a good chunk of this race. First, he gets bullied and gets passed by like eight cars in the space of a handful of corners. And then his car dies during the red flag.
Yeah, it was a brutal weekend for him. It was weird because he got out of the way of Pato O'Ward driving into the rear of Scott McLaughlin's car on a restart, and then he just got bullied by a bunch of people, like including Kirkwood. Kirkwood was one of the dudes who nudged him. His own teammate hit him. I was going to make this point. Kyle Kirkwood has been tremendous this year. Like, he is absolutely one to watch as a future title contender. I actually saw in Marshall Pruitt's latest silly season update, Penske are apparently eyeing up Kirkwood as a future Willpower successor.
Oh, dear God.
Could you imagine a fleet of Penskes with Newgarden, McLaughlin, and Kirkwood?
Could you imagine Joseph Newgarden as the old guy in a Penske stable?
What the hell is this?
Right. The point of getting that here, right, is that if anything, it's been frustrating that Kirkwood still is a little bit rough around the edges. He still is a bit dodgy in terms of his racecraft. We saw it in Toronto where he hit the back of Helio Castroneves' car and caused a multiple car accident. He nudged Pato O'Ward at Road America. He nudged his own teammate when he had no reason to during Nashville. He's still a bit clumsy and still a bit rough around the edges. But I'm nitpicking over the upside of this guy, which is humongous. We're talking
about pretty much everyone at Andretti besides Devlin.
Right.
Like, everyone there is extraordinarily fast. Like, there has been a point where pretty much every competitive Andretti has been the fastest car on a given weekend. But all three of their main guys are rough around the edges, they can make mistakes,
They've combined for two whole wins, and they all belong to Kyle Kirkwood this season. It's not a good first race for Colton Herta at his first race in Nashville since moving to the area. Romain Grosjean tried the Christian Lundgaard mustache trick, got him back in the top 10, thankfully.
Solid from Grosjean,
he decided to shave the mustache.
It was solid from Grosjean, but like another case of probably what could have been, because he went from fighting for the win to
Why did they put him on alternate tires for the last stint?
He had to.
Really?
He could have taken the middle stint for that.
They went primary alternate on Grosjean's run.
I don't like that sequencing. You should have done primary alternate primary.
It feels like they put him on the alternate strategy as a guinea pig, and it just blew up in his face. Still got a good result out of it, but it could have been more.
It should have been a podium.
It really should have been, and that would have cleansed a lot of the bad juju that Grosjean has been carrying around. But still, it's better than crashing. And Colton Herta, I think, is just wearing the cartoon anvil at this point.
I would love to see Colton Herta in F1, but I think it's time we just, if we do not mention Colton Herta and Formula One in the same sentence, Colton Herta will be a healthier, more successful driver. Because I swear, as soon as he started getting linked to that Faenza seat, it has been nothing but...
And thank God he dodged that bullet given the bus that AlphaTauri has produced this year.
I'll briefly mention this real quick.
Colton Herta has now gone 25 races since his last win.
That seems impossible.
And it feels like there's been a dozen races that he could have won, and through Andretti issues or self-inflicted errors, he just hasn't.
Hey, can we talk about how Alex Palou pitted like 5 or 6 laps earlier than everybody and still salvaged third place?
No, I'm checking the code in this game because Alex Palou had to have modified that RNG. He was dead to rights on that strategy. He was going to finish 15th at a stretch, and he got two opportune cautions down the stretch to just eke out enough fuel to finish third and drive even more points home on Joseph Newgarden's skull.
Only 4 points, but, you know, that's...
Joseph needs to be taking out a huge chunk every race. He can't be losing points.
It's never, ever been in his destiny at this point, I don't think. Not even after he won Iowa. It was never in his destiny.
This was a golden chance for Newgarden. This was one of Newgarden's better road and street races all year long. It's his home race. He finished fourth. That's a good result for a guy whose average on road and street tracks this year has been 9. That's a great result for Joseph. Didn't matter. Lost 4 points. And more importantly, he lost a round to close the gap in.
Yeah. Palou pulled out more points on him. Threw a couple of people right out of mathematical contention in this race because there's nothing you can do about him. The two people who beat him this weekend are irrelevant in the championship.
Yeah, like Kyle Kirkwood's fallen by the wayside. He is points behind Christian Lundgaard, and Scott McLaughlin is well over 100 points in rears. He's not catching him. We have not seen a driver clinch the championship in IndyCar before the final race of the series, since the sport reunified in 2008.
He's just too bulletproof.
Oh, and guess what round's coming up next? The one he dominated earlier this season. Indianapolis again.
Broke the field over his knee.
Yeah.
Only now it's going to have more NASCAR in the paddock, too.
I mean, there was a realistic shot that had they not put him on that strategy, he probably could have been fighting for the win. His pace was monstrous.
His pace was as good as anybody's. Just your track position was not there, and they gambled on the early David Malukas rear wing failure caution that came out, and he was caught bang to rights. They told him to push as hard as he could because they knew they were going to run out. They did not have enough fuel to make the end until Linus Lundqvist hit the wall with 10 to go. And then the track blocker of, I think it was Canapino, Rosenquist, and Benjamin Peterson that caused that second to last, that final caution, and that late red flag that got Palou back into play on fuel. And yeah, third again. He just keeps rolling 20s. I don't know how he keeps doing this.
Well, and we've said this on this podcast before. We'll say it again. you win your championships on your bad days. His bad days are a broken front wing and second and third on a god-awful strategy. There's just nothing. You can't take points out of that.
Average finish on this year is still 3.4.
His average finish went up.
He's unplayable. He's on. Listen, Gateway is Joseph's last chance. He has to beat him at Gateway badly. Otherwise, we're done here.
I know exactly how it's going to go. Paloa's going to run ninth all race, not great pace. He's going to somehow end up third.
Yeah.
It's not in Joseph's control anymore.
No.
Alex Paloa is going to have to fail to finish a race if Joseph Newgarden has any chance of getting back in this championship.
Well, RJ, that was it. He had control in this race, and it just got ripped right back out of his hands.
Yeah. Speaking of control, let's talk a little bit about the situation at Mayer Shank, and it's not an easy one here. Latest driver to fill in for Simon Pagenaud, though, was at Mayer Shank Racing, was 2022 Indy Next champion Linus Lundqvist, and he sadly crashed out 10 laps from the end, but was running 11th at the time. What did you make of Linus's debut and the worrying signs that Pagenaud is about to miss his sixth consecutive race, because it's already been confirmed he will not race at the Indianapolis Road Course for the Gallagher Grand Prix this weekend? Linus is back in the car again for the second race in a row during the doubleheader this weekend. So,
to start off on the Lundqvist side of things, if I didn't express it enough, you know, the last time we talked about Indy Next versus Formula 2, the talent and road to Indy is not the problem. There's a lot of things that are wrong there, but it's not like they lack for talent. I think this race really illustrated that, yes, Linus Lundqvist may have crashed, but the wrong two drivers got the call. Because if Stingray Rob was not named Stingray Rob, it this trend be remembered in the same vein as any other anonymous IndyCar bust. Benjamin Peterson was great at the 500, but he's been poor elsewhere. And another crash coming off a race where you were parked for being too slow is not helping matters. Linus Lundqvist has come in and changed the fortunes of a team that is, by and large, underachieved this year. Hell, Mayer Shank Racing, since 2021, when Elio won the 500, when it was announced they're getting Simon Pagenaud and Elio's coming back full-time, we're thinking, wow, the sky's the limit, even with these two old dudes at the team. They've been largely underachieving on the IndyCar side of things.
I wouldn't call it underachieving. I'd call it poor.
Linus did all this work. He got to the second round of qualifying, first time of asking. I think Pagenaud once was the only other driver that made the second phase of qualifying on a road and street course this year. He runs solidly in the top 10. You know, he's banging on the door of a scoop result. By the way, for half this race, he had his cooling scoop fall off the car. And anybody who's living in the Southeast will tell you that, like, yeah, it was
a spicy humid ball. I mean,
down there.
I mean, we saw it with the tires, that the alternate tires was just too hot for them. They just melted in the sun.
Mm-hmm. 18-degree weather.
Linus put in a phenomenal first audition for. Make no, there was mistakes made by a lot of parties. That's why Linus Lundqvist didn't get a full-time seat this year. That will not happen again next year. I feel like he will find a way somehow to get onto this grid. And I hate that this opportunity is coming at the expense of Simon Pagenaud, an Indy 500 winner, IndyCar champion, a Le Mans overall runner-up, a Daytona 24-hour winner. He's been sitting out multiple rounds. If you hadn't heard, he had this bad crash in mid-Ohio practice. Car tumbles over, lost his brakes, hasn't been cleared to race ever since. It's a tough one because, like, we've seen it with many times many athletes and concussions. Like, sometimes you can bounce right back the second you're out of protocol. It's just like you keep trucking on like it's no big deal. But then sometimes you have cases like, well, millions of people watched Tua Tagovailoa take one of the more uncomfortable hits in NFL history just this past season. And we all know the Miami Dolphins rushed him way back too soon from injury. Dale Earnhardt Jr. took a lick in 2002 that had ramifications 15 years down the road. Most recently, Kurt Busch took a not that bad looking hit, but it ended up being the thing that put him out of NASCAR as a full-time driver. Darren Franchini.
He's still out, RJ. Still hasn't raced since that.
Darren Franchini as well. When he hit the catch fence in Houston, doctor said, yeah, you're never going to race again. What I do like is that Simon's been very transparent about his timeline for recovery. They're not rushing him back too soon. I just say that if you're out here thinking that MSR is just doing this as a convenient means to audition other drivers or that anybody's lying about this, you're frankly a damn idiot, in my opinion.
I want
Simon to come back.
I'm very worried about Simon's well-being.
Yeah, yeah.
If we have had next to no details, he's not shared anything. MSR has not shared anything. And it's been well over a month now, but better part of 2 months with basically no medical update.
He's been giving us steady updates through socials.
He's been giving us updates that he's not ready.
Hmm.
Basically, yeah. Which is more or less the kicking of the can down the road that we got with Kurt Busch up until the point where we got the, I'm not racing anymore full time. First and foremost, I just want Simon to be okay.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's the most important thing. Like, none of us want MSR to throw him back in the car too soon, or anybody to throw him back in the car too soon.
Yeah, because, I mean, he also has sports car commitments with MSR. We'll see how long those last, given the current rumblings out of the IMSA paddock and, indeed, the implications that will have on their IndyCar program. Because let's just say there's some people in that team who are probably not working there anymore next year.
Well, what I will say is that MSR does have an announcement tomorrow. I do not think it's going to be about Simon per se. But they will have an announcement tomorrow of some kind regarding the future of their team. We do know that Tom Blomqvist for months has been eyed up a move back to single seaters. And remember, he is an MSR driver, not necessarily Honda driver, anybody else.
Yep. Yeah, he is explicitly contracted to MSR. To touch on Blomqvist for a little bit, honestly, given we've seen far more experienced people drive like damn fools at this track, I'd say that you could do a lot worse than debuting, getting through to qualifying two, and then setting. He was the fastest car. He set the fastest lap of the race. You could do a whole lot worse than that showing before he hit the wall.
Yeah.
The people who got the call up this year full time, I'm going to be honest with you, they're both garbage. I'm going to rip the bandage off right now. Benjamin Peterson has driven terrible to borderline unsafe at a couple of opportunities this year. And Stingray Rob, was just disqualified for a team/him violation last race.
It's not the fact that Rob has been like bad. It's just been like he's just been nowhere.
He's been nowhere. He's been involved in a series of crashes that have looked goofy.
His teammate in the first Indy road course, where he hit Malukas out.
Yeah, he wiped out his teammate, the Cardinal Sin.
If he was not named Stingray Rob,
would he be more memorable than any other person who went to coin and did not much?
Francesco Dracon, Rodolfo Gonzalez, God, even in recent years, they've had to scrape from the bottom of the barrel.
First and foremost, because I am the Pagano fan on the podcast. I've met the dude multiple times.
As have I.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Wonderful to talk to in person. It was fun seeing him for the promotion for the now famously canceled Boston IndyCar race. I knew him from sports cars previously. I say hi to him. He's like, you know me?
Bless.
Because this was early 2016. He had just come off a not amazing first year at Penske. I'd say he made up for it in 2016 and then in 2019.
Just a touch.
I just hope he's okay.
Yeah.
Because the going this long with basically no medical news, I'm really worried about his well-being.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, I've let you guys talk this out because there's you've taken a lot of what I was going to say. I mean, my general thoughts are, first and foremost, I hope the quality of his life is okay. That's the first, yeah. That's the most important thing. He seems cognitively aware and the updates he has shared, which is good, which is the most important thing. It is concerning. He's going to miss 6 races. I know a part of that is IndyCar's very intense schedule, especially in the middle of the year, which doesn't help. But generally speaking, and I've mentioned this before on this show many a time, we have barely scratched the surface on head injuries in sport. There is so much unbroken ground left to explore. I mean, a couple of examples. It still angers me that MotoGP doesn't have a concussion protocol, you know, like, despite the fact that head injuries are very common in crashes that take part in that sport.
By the nature of motorcycle racing, I mean, I'll tell you for free that I have had my bell rung coming off of a bike before, coming off of a dirt bike, and it fucks with you.
Yeah. Absolutely, like
that's your computer.
Yeah, MotoGP doesn't have a head injury protocol.
That's crazy.
When it really
should. Not to be that guy, but Slam Ball, available to watch on the ESPN Plus network, has a concussion protocol.
Right now, in our national sport of soccer, there is genuine investigations that are going into linking the possibility of heading the ball and an increased risk of Alzheimer's and dementia.
And that's not even like a traditional context. That's not a context where in the sense of like American football, right, rugby, ice hockey, any of that stuff.
Like, yeah. to the point where they're saying that you might be 4 to 5 times more likely to get it if you had a significant career playing football, because heading the ball is like giving yourself mini concussions over an extended period of time. Now, don't get me wrong, it's still initial research, and then obviously more will be underdone, and obviously more will be done over time. But there is genuine calls to eliminate heading from football. Like that's how serious we're talking here. Mm-hmm. Where we could have heading eliminated from the game altogether. Like, that's still probably a few years away, but it's certainly a possibility that's on the table. We are still so far off where we need to be as sports entirely when it comes to dealing with head injuries. But look, the worst way is I'm spitballing here because we just don't know how hurt or how far off full fitness Simon Pagenaud even is. And don't get me wrong, he has no obligation to tell us. I need to stress
not at all.
This.
Yeah,
well, I need to stress this. Because, yeah, Cam's absolutely right. I've said it when Michael Schumacher got hurt, and I will say it again here. He owes us nothing. It's a medical issue. That's between him and his doctors. Like, that's got nothing to do with us. We are not obligated to know what exactly he's going through. But as a sports fan, as a racing fan, having seen what happened with Kurt Busch and how the parallels are too much to ignore, at this point, I'm concerned, and I think it's valid to be concerned about his general well-being going forward in terms of being able to drive a race car. Because like Cam said, Simon Pagenaud is a fascinating character, one of the genuinely most interesting people in IndyCar. He's raced so many different disciplines over the last 20 years. He's a genuinely funny, entertaining person. He's never taken himself too seriously. And, like, he's a fantastic race car driver and has been for many, many years. One of the best in the series.
I say, pretty much everywhere he's gone. I watched him starting out, actually, in LMP2. The mighty LMP2s of the late 2000s with the Acuras. And then got a factory Peugeot drive that only ended because Peugeot up and shuttered the program at the end of 2011.
I remember his first year in Champ Car in 2007. I actually actually showed some people that first race on the streets of Las Vegas, but not the streets that F1ers race around. No, no, these are far less glamorous streets, but Simon Pagenaud did a pretty good account for himself in that rookie year against his teammate, Will Power?
I just remember him in the final stages of Le Mans 2011, just in the what is the closest finish of the modern age at Le Mans, not the closest finish of all time, but certainly closest in the last 50 or so years, just going blow for blow with the crew in the number two Audi in changeable conditions in a car that was perhaps half a step off of where Audi was in 2011, just wringing its neck. And then, you know, everything he's done in IndyCar, it's been a lean couple of years, but he put the field in a casket in 2019 at the 500.
Oh, massively.
You know, one of the most dominant 500 performances of the modern age.
Like,
to echo what Dre said is, again, he doesn't owe us an update. You know, he owes us only, you know, what he can tell us when he's ready. I just hope he's okay.
Yeah,
indeed.
That's the only thing I can say about it is I hope he's all right. And I hope this isn't the end of him in a competitive racing car, because he is one of my favorite drivers still taking part in any series.
Absolutely. Like, if heaven forbid, we've already seen Simon Pagenaud drive his last race in IndyCar. 15 wins, 38 podiums over a 14-year career across both sides of the split, including time off. He won Rookie of the Year in both Champ Car and IndyCar. That is a remarkable achievement. It's just, yeah, I don't want to see it go out this way, but all we can do is just hope for some better news down the road.
We'll stick with you on this one, RJ, as well, because we got the news literally breaking as we recorded our Formula E season finale last week that Nashville is now confirmed as the season finale of IndyCar, moving away from Monterey and the Laguna Seca race. It's going to be over there. It's got a new Broadway layout. RJ, you're the biggest champion advocate of this place.
As the resident Nashville expert, let me just talk a little bit about the new course. Okay, so if you're the promoter of this event, you had Broadway, the big street. It's like if you were to have a street race down Las Vegas, you got to have the Strip. If you were to have a street race in New York City, you got to have Times Square in it somehow, although you really can't do that nowadays. But you can have a race through Broadway if you're racing in Nashville. Had to happen. Kind of feels weird that they didn't have it. Plus, you open up the event to be more like a festival type event, and that's what the promoters of this event are promising. Concerts every night on race weekend, promising another great time at the world's largest, fastest outdoor bachelorette party / paddle tavern. I'd say if you can replace bits of football stadium car park with an actual landmark of the city, you've done a good job. And I will say, having walked those streets, there's more challenge to it than it looks like on the 2D drawing. Like, there's the left-hander that feeds right back onto Korean Veterans Boulevard. It feeds right back on the bridge. That's an off-camber uphill corner. That's going to be interesting to negotiate. And as Marshall Pruitt wrote this week, a lot of mechanics and teams will be happy that the current Turn 11 that passes by the current Nashville Stadium is gone. Though I look at that new left-hand hairpin going east off the bridge and then wrapping back around where Turn 9 used to be. Could be great. Could be a mess. Could be a hot mess.
I don't feel like I can lie. I'm disgusted.
Well, remember, if this new course flops, you can blame the Tennessee Titans for deciding, no, we don't want to renovate our new stadium. We're going to build one at $2.1 million next door, which, by the way, the same cost adjusted for inflation that it took to build the current Wembley Stadium.
Yeah.
Well, when in doubt, blame the Titans. I think we can say that for a lot of things. You know, the first thing I see when I see the new layout.
Musical note.
I actually thought Boxy Avis, which I'm sure now Ryan Eric King is now sharpening a knife somewhere.
Pork chop.
I think two things. They took away pretty much all of the choke points that cause all the stupid track blocking incidents that we've had here.
Oh, yeah. Like, without
conversely, I think they've also taken all of the track's personality away, too. Which is probably probably not a good thing to say about a track, I think. You've fixed all the problems, and now it has no personality.
It still has the bridge, and as I mentioned, that
sector... A bridge is not a personality for a racetrack. Not for Nashville, and not for High Speed Ring.
Can't argue that it's not a monument of the track.
My general thoughts on it is I'm pretty neutral to it. I think it's funny that it looks like a pork chop. I think that pit lane is going to be very interesting to see in real time. It's going to
might be the worst pit lane entry I have ever seen on a racetrack.
The pit lane is going to be like a hot mess. And ironically, that's inside a parking lot to Nashville Coliseum.
Of course it is. I was going to say, it looks like a mess to me, like that pit lane entry and whatnot. I think the track itself is fine. I think it'll race well enough. You've still got the bridge as a major two overtake choke point. The drivers, I'm sure, will use push to pass to potentially overtake on. I think it's fine. I don't think it's going to blow anybody away. And I think by the time it actually rolls around next year, I don't think we're going to notice the differences very much. Besides the pit lane, which will be a mess, like Detroit's was.
Now look, I love Laguna Seca. We all love Laguna Seca. And growing up, watching American Open Wheel Racing, to me, Laguna Seca, I always remember that as a finale or a championship deciding round. Attendance reports aside, it's typically not a track that's conducive to race finishes that aren't painfully routine. You know, you get a high percentage of front row starters to go on to win the race most of the time. And that's part of the reason why people saw Sonoma as a not good place for a championship decider. And that place did not have a whole lot of American open wheel racing cachet, / was only in one Gran Turismo game and not several. Auto Club Speedway has held championship finales, but now they don't know what to do with it. They want to turn it into something else, or they might just tear it down entirely. I don't know. St. Petersburg, Long Beach had interesting championship finales, but they only got uprooted out of their spring dates because of a once-in-a-generation pandemic. And, well, a finale at IMS Road Course just ain't it. I get the skepticism. I get that with the shitty amount of nasty work that the Tennessee GOP is doing, in their own state, the amount of money that's being put behind this trends towards sports washing. But just by itself, as an event, it might just work. I'm willing to give it a chance.
Fair enough. I can't really argue for much more than that. And that'll just about do it for this episode. IndyCar is back this weekend. It's for the Gallagher Grand Prix. It's at the Indianapolis Road Course for the second time this year. Maybe the last year we get two of these in over a season, because it's looking like the Milwaukee Mile will take its place next year. So enjoy it while it comes around. I think they're going to cut the number of laps as well, because I think they did that last year. I think it was 75 instead of 85 laps.
I'll have to wait and see. Potentially the last NASCAR race around the road course this weekend.
Please no more. Please kill it after this year. Every NASCAR race around this track has been total fucking chaos.
You're going to get the Brickyard 400 back, and you're going to like it.
I am not going to like either of these options.
What if we added Kamui Kobayashi this weekend?
It's still no dice.
He drives a hard bargain, RJ.
What if we gave you Kamui Kobayashi and Jensen Button and took out Noah Gragson and replaced him with Mike Rockenfeller?
You're getting there.
It's a stop.
I'll throw in my counter offer tomorrow.
God, yeah. We really are trying to become a NASCAR podcast.
Have your people call our people. But until then, I've been Dre Harrison. They've been Cam Buckley and RJ O'Connell. We'll catch you next week for, again, as mentioned, IndyCar at the Gallagher Grand Prix. Until then, thank you very much for listening. Sayonara.
You know, Laguna Seca may have the corkscrew, but does it have Kid Rock's big ass honky tonk and rock and roll steakhouse.
Go to hell, RJ.
God help us.